Thank you for listening to The Rest is History. For bonus episodes, early access, ad-free listening, and access to our chat community, sign up at restishistorypod.com. That's restishistorypod.com. Hello, and welcome to the first episode of The Rest is History, a new podcast about all things historical. I'm Dominic Sambrook, and my sidekick, as I like to refer to him, although he would no doubt refer to himself as my puppet master, is opposite me, and it's Mr. Tom Holland. Hello, Tom.
Thank you very much, Dominic. What an ambivalent introduction that was. Lovely to be here.
You looking forward to the podcast? Done a podcast before?
I've never done a podcast before. I've been on lots, but I've never actually done one. But since everybody else in Britain is doing one, I thought that
not one like this, though. Not one like this.
No, not one like this. This is going to be something completely and radically new.
Well, that remains to be seen. Tom, credentials?
Historian of the ancient world, early Middle Ages. And I've just written a book, Dominion, which goes from 480 BC right the way up to the present day, a history of Christianity called Dominion, available in all good bookshops, folks.
Very good book, even if I say so myself. A very good book, Tom.
And you?
And I write about modern Britain mainly, a little bit in America, but mainly in modern Britain. So I've written a series of books about Britain since the 1950s, and the most recent one is called Who Dares Wins, and it's all about Margaret Thatcher in the 80s and Duran Duran and Spandau Ballet and the Falklands War and everything you would ever want to know.
So I'm batting for the ancient Romans. Dominic is batting for Duran Duran. We're covering all the bases there, I like to think. So essentially, we can cover almost anything. And that, of course, is the great joy of podcasts. And Dominic, what do you want to talk about today?
Well, I think we should start as we mean to go on. And I think we should start with greatness. Who is great? What is it? And why aren't people great anymore? So, Tom.
Yes.
You, as a great man yourself.
Yes.
Throw some great figures from history at me.
Well, the biggie, of course, is Alexander.
Is he the first?
The great. Well, I think what's interesting is that the idea of somebody being great isn't actually a kind of natural thing. It's something that's bred of very specific cultural circumstances, and the idea that somebody can be great is originally a Persian idea.
The great king, is it?
The great king. So he's the king of the kings. He's the great king. That's how he's known.
So the king of Persia was superior to...
Because the Persian Empire is the greatest empire that anyone had ever seen. And okay. I just increasingly think that basically everything goes back to Persia, ultimately. Everything kind of, you know, you
follow something... That'll go down very well with people in Iran.
Well, you follow things through and it always goes back to Persia. Okay. And so the king of Persia is the great king. And then Alexander III of Macedon conquers the Persian Empire. So he then becomes the great king.
So this is, what, the 4th century BC?
Yeah, 4th century. So he dies, and his empire splits up, and his various generals kind of scavenge over it like a pack of hyenas, and they all want to be like Alexander. And there's one king in particular who called Antiochus who goes back into Persia, tries to reconquer it, and he adopts the name of Great, it seems. So he's calling himself the Great King. So there's a hint there that this is where it begins. But then what actually happens is that it's the Romans who pick up on it. So the first reference to Alexander is in the mid-3rd century.
AD or BC, sorry.
BC. And they are calling him Alexander Magnus, Alexander the Great. So basically, Dominic, what I'm saying is that the idea of greatness comes from ancient history.
Yeah.
And that's brilliant. I mean, so basically that's mine.
Yes.
But you, of course, you're a modern historian. So, I mean, basically, you don't have great people.
No, not really. So I do my research for this podcast. So I looked at the Wikipedia list of people who are great. I found another website, which I'm rustling my paper to prove that I've done my research. Another website which begins with the words, history has produced at least 38 great people.
38?
At least 38. It's very precise. So
there could be some more out there.
Waiting
to be captured.
Who knows? But anyway, let's go back to the Wikipedia, because Wikipedia is obviously the thing that people will look at.
So what's the most recent?
So I think the most recent is the Emperor Meiji of Japan. He dies in 1912. So he's the guy who opens up Japan to the West. He he modernizes Japan and sort of pushes it into the 20th century, if you like. But everybody before that, so the last people that we think of as great are kind of Peter the Great.
Catherine the Great.
Catherine the Great. So we're talking Frederick beginning of the 18th century. Then we've got the enlightened despots. I mean, I found them excruciatingly boring, actually, when I did them for A-level. Catherine the Great, Frederick the Great, people who modernize Russia and Prussia and these sort of Central European monarchies.
But who's deciding that they're great? I mean, is there a kind of selection committee, like the Nobel Prize committee?
No, I think it emerges from the sort of immediate historiography. So it's a kind of creation of Victorian writers. And I think greatness in this, when we talk about people being great, I think a lot of it is to do with sort of nation building, state builders. And I think it's the thing that Victorians did. I mean, as you know, the Victorians or 19th century nationalists generally were all about finding historical roots of nation states and arguing that, you know, they would sort of delve back into the archives to prove that a given nation had sort of been born unsullied and pure at the dawn of history. And I think they looked for founding fathers, and they were generally fathers. I mean, they were Catherine the Great, I suppose. But by and large, they're men, they're warriors who've welded their people into this sort of mighty realm or modernized it or something like that.
But it's so in which case, why is George Washington not George the Great? Because he's a found. I mean, he's the essence of a founding father.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it?
Is it because it's a republic?
So, well, you could go with the. I mean,
so you can't have great men in republics.
No, you do have great men. And to just concentrate on America for a second, they don't use that terminology, but they do use the terminology of the founding fathers. And they have, you know, the Lincoln Memorial, the Jefferson Monument. They have all these kind of, you know, you can go to kind of Monticello, Thomas Jefferson's house, and kind of do homage to the great man.
Yeah, but I think the fact that they're not, it's not Abraham the Great. It's not George the Great. I think that does suggest that there is an issue with in republics.
Yeah, maybe.
And indeed democracies with the idea of, you know,
well, I definitely
of calling
that.
Someone great.
I absolutely think you're
so
right.
So these are
about
all
that.
Monarchs.
So I think,
is there anyone who's called who's called great who's not a monarch? I mean, Pompey the Great, I guess.
There are some earls and bishops. I mean, I'm going back to the Wikipedia list, but it's a bit desperate.
But basically, they're all monarchs. So
yeah, isn't it true that by definition in a democracy you can't have the great, because an awful lot of people, often a majority, may well have voted for other candidates, may well have voted against them.
But also, it's an offence against the very idea of democratic,
yes,
you know, the kind of implicit egalitarianism of a republic or a democracy. The idea that there are great people, great men, who put democracies in their shadow is seen as being threatening.
Lots of democracies do have that, though, don't they? So his,
yeah, but they don't call them great. I mean, you don't.
What about Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, Father Turk? The founder of modern Turkey. So there's a man. I mean, effectively, I mean, he is, you know.
Yeah, but he's another kind of founding father who's sticking it all together.
Yeah.
So
there are some 20th century
examples.
I mean, in Ireland, is Eamon de Valera.
Yeah, but he's not Eamon the Great, is he? I mean, you know, I mean, and I think also the other thing is, so the idea of great men.
Yeah, and they're generally men, aren't they?
Yeah, of great men as the people who power history forwards. That's a very kind of, that's Thomas Carlyle, the great Victorian biographer, who is very, very kind of keen on that idea. And that then, Carlyle was one of Hitler's favourite authors. I mean, so Hitler in the bunker is, I think I'm right in saying, has Carlyle's biography of Frederick the Great,
yes,
who is seen as great because it looks as though Prussia is going to be crushed by all the enemies that are massing around it, and Frederick wriggles free and lives to do another day.
Do you know what, Tom? When Roosevelt died, just before the end of the Second World War, Goebbels and Hitler have this conversation in the bunker where they say, this is just what happened to Frederick the Great, and history is repeating itself. His enemies died just when he was going to be beaten, and we are just like Frederick the Great, and we are going to wriggle free. So you're right, there's a sort of shadow hanging over.
So Frederick, the King of Prussia in the 18th century, who essentially raises Prussia up from being a kind of Hicksville, backward, no-hoper of a power, to being one of the great powers of Europe, and kind of essentially the stepping stone to what becomes United Germany in the 19th century. So, yeah, anything that Hitler's into, obviously,
is bad.
Becomes problematic, Wagner, to put it mildly. So
all the, classical music.
Well, so the sense that the fascists identified with that idea of greatness.
But lots of people identify with greatness, don't they? First of all children reading history books identify with the idea of greatness because they see themselves as the great...
Only if it's safely in the past. So it's safe to read about Alfred the Great because...
But not about Pol Pot the Great.
No, well, yeah. Or Mao the Great or Stalin the Great.
Well, here's a big
issue. Because obviously, if you're a fascist, then you believe in great men shaping destiny. So it's fine for Hitler and Mussolini to broadcast themselves as being great. Stalin and Mao are just as influential figures, but they see themselves as the expression of the will of the people. And so even though Mao is the great helmsman or whatever, you can't talk in that sense of greatness that is associated with monarchs. Because
I don't buy that at all. I think you do talk about that with them.
You don't talk about Stalin being great. Stalin the Great. Hitler, I think, would you know, Adolf the Great, Stalin, that would have been...
Stalin's iconography was all about Stalin as a great man. I mean, the images of him, the father of his people. Just like Hitler, he would get love letters from ordinary Russian women. He would, you know, he was sort of projected as this colossus, larger than life, supremely wise, great military leader. All of this sort of stuff.
But officially... Stalin is the expression of the will of the people. That's what he's about. Marxism is founded on the idea that individuals, great people, are just kind of surface froth. That what matters are the great tides of economic history, of class warfare. That is really what determines history. And so any notion that great individuals shape history is a delusion. And of course, I mean, there are all kinds of paradoxes around Stalin's primacy. But I think that ideologically there's a problem for communists with talking about great people.
But they always have they always haven't. I mean, we've all seen those Red Square parades where they have, the icons.
Lenin literally mummified like a pharaoh.
Right, exactly.
I agree. There are paradoxes, but officially...
Hey, isn't this interesting? So Lenin's body mummified right now in Red Square, if it weren't for COVID, we could go and be doing this live from Lenin's tomb. That's Alexander the Great again, all over again, isn't it? His body was kidnapped after he died and taken to Alexandria as a sort of badge of authenticity for the Ptolemies, the dynasty that took over Egypt, which is basically what Lenin's successors did with his body.
Yes.
So all you're missing there is the words "the Great."
Yes, but I think I think what it suggests is that there is a kind of inherent desire on humans to kind of acknowledge and indeed kind of prostrate yourselves before the idea of greatness.
Great king.
But that in the modern world is in conflict with a reluctance to express it. And that's part of republics, it's part of democracies, and it's definitely part of kind of communist states.
But what's so interesting is that, so in the modern world, the people who believe in greatness tend to be, shall we say, harder core than people who don't. Yes. But even sort of your most, high-minded sort of, I don't know, Guardian-reading vegan believes implicitly in greatness, don't they? Because you have, I mean, to question, Nelson Mandela? Is he not great? Yeah. Is he not this inspirational figure who transcended his times and bloody...
Yes,
blah.
Okay.
Martin Luther King, they have Martin Luther King's Day in America.
Yes, okay. So that is a kind of different expression of what greatness is, and that I guess would be moral greatness.
It's not just moral greatness, is it? It's surfing the tide of history. It's, you know, he was on the side of history, and
the arc of justice.
The arc of justice. That's it. Barack Obama will be in that sort of box one day, won't he?
Yeah. But I guess that there is a kind of qualitative difference there because Mandela is seen as being great because he's seen as morally great. Same with
Gandhi.
With Martin, yes, and Gandhi. And it's not greatness in the kind of Alexander mold of.
But if you were a child, you would, 1,000 years ago or something, would you not grow? And you were sort of noble parents or something, and you were grown up being taught by a monk. Wouldn't you be taught that these great figures were people to emulate, that they had moral qualities as well as purely martial ones?
I think that's interesting because actually 1,000 years ago, if you're in Europe, you would have a very Christian perspective on this. And I think there is a deep ambivalence in monasteries, for instance, about kings.
Yeah.
Alfred is... There are hints in the sources that there were monks who felt that Alfred was perhaps a little bit too pushy. But equally, there are, you know, the part of why monks subsequently are able to enshrine Alfred as great is because he's seen as having been a great patron of the church. There's a kind of, but there is a Christian ambivalence towards figures like Alexander, who are pagan, who are definitely seen as being steeped in blood. The idea that martial greatness is the definition of greatness, I think, is a kind of legacy of the kind of ambivalent Christian attitudes towards greatness that we've inherited.
I'm Anthony Scaramucci, former White House Director of Communications and Wall Street financier.
And I'm Katty Kay, US Special Correspondent for BBC Studios. I've been covering American politics for almost 3 decades.
Welcome to The Rest is Politics US, brought to you by Goal Hanger.
Go on, tell us, were those donations you made, like Obama in 2008, was that idealism? Were you hoping to get something out of these campaigns that would serve your own business interests, for example?
So I think this will either make this podcast incredibly successful, Katty, or people will be horrified and they'll shut it off right now, because I'm going to be very real with you. The Obama donation, I had gone to law school with President Obama. We were not classmates. I was a few years ahead of him. It was 2007. He was then Senator Obama. I had a check in my breast pocket. I went over to the senator. I said, Senator, I said, you and I didn't really know each other in law school, but I'm about to hand you a big check. Can I lie to my friends and tell them that you and I knew each other in law school? Well, Obama looks at me, had the best smile in American politics since Jack Kennedy.
Forever.
Yeah. He lights up. He looks at me and says, I'll tell you what, if you double the amount of the check, we'll take it back to Hawaii. Okay. And I looked at him. I said, you're done. I had another check in my pocket. I ripped it up. I doubled the amount of the check. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've been to more White House Christmas parties during the Obama administration than the Trump administration.
In this pivotal year for the United States, democracy, and world affairs, Britain's biggest podcast, The Rest is Politics, is launching stateside.
Uncovering secrets from inside the Biden and Trump inner circles and how they shape the world's most important economy, but also the global economy too.
New episodes are released every Friday morning.
Just search The Rest is Politics US wherever you get your podcasts.
So here's somebody who was definitely inspired by martial greatness, Churchill.
Right. So Churchill's really...
Now, Churchill, we could do a billion podcasts about Churchill and not exhaust the sort of the stuff to be said or the public enthusiasm. Is he great? I mean, I would say actually flawed, but I mean, everybody's flawed because we're all human. I would say yes. I would say it's ludicrous to say he's not a great figure who, you know, has become an icon, who's become a symbol of the nation, who... And actually, all the flaws are part of greatness because everybody we've talked about has been flawed. Do you think Churchill was great?
Yeah, so I think that Churchill, well, the kind of way that people have been reacting to Churchill recently highlights the way in which the meaning of great has evolved, I think. Mm-hmm. So I think Churchill is great in the classical sense of it. He is a great man who, in an hour of crisis, saves his country.
That's something very Greek, isn't it?
Yeah. So he's in that sense he is great because although he is personally flawed, those flaws actually only serve to emphasize the scale of his achievement.
Yeah.
In rallying and saving his country and indeed much
yeah,
more
by that. Well, people bought that at the time, didn't they?
Yeah,
I mean, people
absolutely.
In the 1940s
so, yeah,
knew
absolutely.
What.
Absolutely. So he is, you know, he is the British lion personified. I think that. One of the reasons why his statue keeps getting attacked now is that the sense of greatness has evolved and become what we were saying, well, what I was saying about Mandela or Martin Luther King, that greatness, you have to be morally great.
Right.
And I think that there is a feeling that Churchill, on that measurement of greatness, doesn't quite measure
well, it's
up because he's seen as, you know, he has racist views.
You mentioned the arc of history. He's seen as somebody who's on the wrong side of a lot of.
Yes. Well, he was, even by the standards of the time, he was a huge reactionary.
Yeah. But in a way, the fact that people are sort of daubing racist on his statue is proof of greatness, because if he weren't great, I mean, who would care? you know, if he was some sort of middle ranking.
Well, I think that's an attack not just on Churchill, but on an understanding of greatness that is now very, very contested.
Yes.
I think it kind of blurs in with the fact that the main island in the UK is called Great Britain. Obviously, it has nothing to do with the fact that Britain objectively is great. It's simply the fact that the island of Britain is bigger than Little Britain, which is Brittany.
Yeah.
So that's why it's Great Britain. It's an expression of geographical size. But I think that obviously over Britain's imperial heyday, there was a tendency to say, we're great.
So British nominative history is determinism, great.
Nominative determinism, yes. And I think that, you know, that Churchill is the kind of archetypal poster boy for that idea of Britain being great.
Yes.
And so I think that also is something that is being attacked, because part of what's in the back of the minds of people who see Churchill as a problematic emblem for Britain is the sense that his model of greatness is something that is essentially to be rejected, that it's militarist, that it's supremacist, that it's
but all great, all the people we've talked about,
yeah, well, were, but yeah, but,
fit
but
into that with the exception of Nelson Mandela,
but that
Gandhi.
Again feeds into the idea that we're talking about a model of greatness, an idea of greatness that feels old-fashioned.
Does it feel old-fashioned, though? I mean,
yeah, I think so.
If you're, you know, Chinese, Xi Jinping will he not be great one day?
Yeah, but again, this is the communist thing that he can't be enshrined as a great man, say in the way that the emperor was, or the first emperor.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, China obviously has always had a kind of sense of the great man because it's born with it. The first emperor is seen as very much in the style that we've been talking about, as the guy who creates a state, who fashions an empire, who fashions an order, and that inheritance runs right the way down to the abolition of the figure of the emperor in the early 20th century. But and obviously Mao. And all the, you know, Deng Xiaoping and now that there is a sense in which the figure of the emperor is someone who's absent, you know, that it's kind of like losing a limb or something. But China is officially a communist state. And so I think ideologically there isn't a place for greatness in that kind of Thomas Carlyle
sense. I think
that's
right. I think there is a place. I mean, the Great Helmsman, Mao, all those people, you know, waving their little red books.
Yes, but there is a tension there. The Chinese cannot celebrate Mao as great in the way that the fascists celebrate Hitler as great.
It's odd, isn't it? Because
I don't think that you would get a Chinese general secretary, for instance, behaving in the way that Trump behaved when he returned from his COVID.
taking his mask off and saluting.
I think all of those that you know that was whatever you think of it.
Putin would behave that way, wouldn't
Putin
he?
Putin absolutely would.
He'd take his top off.
Putin absolutely would. Yeah,
actually, the fact that Churchill, Jesus Christ, what a terrible slip. Trump.
Freudian slip there.
I never lived that down. The fact that Trump does behave in that way, and obviously his Make America Great Again stuff, actually shows you just how deeply the concept of greatness is embedded in the American sort of political psyche. The whole iconography of the presidency, actually, is all the great man kind of stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, but again, and that kind of feeds back to what we were talking about, you know, the relationship between Rome and America. I think that there is a huge part of what makes many, many Americans very, very uncomfortable about Trump is the sense that he is pushing that model of greatness too far.
It's odd, isn't it? You know, when I was doing my PhD in history, the idea that I'd be doing a podcast about greatness would have been anathema, because the very idea of greatness to sort of academic historians is complete nonsense and, you know, unthinkable and not worth giving house room to. And we would, you know, have these sort of seminars where if somebody would say X is great, everyone would kind of scoff. But then we'd go to the pub and have this big debate about who was greater, Pele or Maradona or whatever. So the idea of greatness...
Well, sport, yes, because in sport you can measure it.
Well, you can't measure it though, can you?
You kind of can.
Muhammad Ali, of course, famously said, "I am the greatest." He basically created his own myth, which all great men and women do to some extent, didn't? And Maradona,
but part
the same.
Of the appeal of sport is that it provides a stage on which these, you know, the desire for hero worship can be channeled safely.
Yeah. But that's, I mean, and history is no different, surely.
No, because I think that history suggests that, you know, giving a stage to people who see themselves as great and who are seen by other people as great can threaten disaster. If you live in a democracy or a republic, definitely.
See, I think if we went into Waterstones now, to the children's section, to the history section, I mean, they have the horrible histories, but it is all, you know, inspiring girls, wonderful girls, or whatever, those kind of books, you know, the ones I mean. And it's Amelia Earhart, Marie Curie, Agatha Christie, Rosa Parks. I mean, Rosa Parks is somebody who's clearly conceived by lots of people as great, as a great figure.
I don't think the word great is adequate, though. I don't think the model of greatness, as it's traditionally understood.
She has the moral qualities that allowed her to be on the right side of history, to transcend her time, to lead her people, to be the vessel for something bigger than herself.
But again, this goes back to the sense in which, you know, if we are going to talk about people like that as being great, it's because we're talking about moral greatness.
Mm. But can you define? I mean, yours basically there was martial greatness and then moral greatness. But I think the two have always been.
I think it's because we're uncomfortable with the word saint. But I think that actually someone like Mandela or Martin Luther
King, because we would have otherwise have called them a saint.
That the emotions that they inspire are the emotions that traditionally saints have inspired.
Yeah, that's very true.
So they're kind of secular saints.
I buy that.
And I think that's slight. I think it's different.
People visit their shrines. They get relics.
Yeah, but also they're seen as morally inspirational, and that if you behave like them, then you will make the world a better place. I think that's a key part of it. Whereas if you behave like Frederick the Great, you're going to end up in a bunker in Berlin, being attacked by the Soviets.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's
not the fate I want for myself.
No. So I think it's kind of the ambivalent attitude to well, obviously I think everything comes down to Christianity, but I think in the West we remain sufficiently Christian that we're uncomfortable with the idea of great men.
Yeah.
Because we recognize that there is an aspect of that greatness that is kind of pagan almost, that it's a kind of classical ideal that morally we're uncomfortable with. But we're insufficiently Christian that we're happy now to talk about saints.
All right then, Tom. You need to pick three people now who you think are great, and they've got to be alive right now. Maybe they can be out of office.
Why have I got to? Because I don't... imposing this rule.
Just on my own ways, look foolish.
I don't think that this is an age where people are great.
I tell you who will disagree with you, Boris Johnson. He believes in greatness. Do you think one day people will call him Boris the Great or Boris the Fat?
Boris the Fat, I think. Boris not as fat as he was.
So
Boris, absolutely. I mean, he's and Trump, obviously. I mean, I think
Donald the Great.
Yeah, I think that there's a kind of...
With that accent,
maybe a definition of a populist leader is that he would like to think of himself as being called the Great in
that's
the history
true,
book.
Isn't it?
So that might be
Nigel
the definition.
The Great.
Nigel the Great. Yeah, so by that measure, I don't think any of them can... But I'll tell you someone who I think may be remembered as the Great and called the Great would be Putin, who we've talked about.
Yeah, I think
And the
Putin
reason for
is
that
good,
is that I think that Putin is creating his own reality.
Yeah.
Putin is... creating a kind of model of Russian history in which great men do step forward and follow in the footsteps of the great leaders who came before. So not Stalin, but Catherine the Great and Peter the Great, and Peter the Great particularly. And so I think, you know, Catherine the Great reconquers the Crimea.
Which Putin's
done. So I can imagine that Vladimir the Great...
Yeah, I completely buy that. I'm not a Vladimir Putin fan, but clearly... Let's say he does another 10 years, then he goes and people will say he's transformed his country, he's made it strong and respected on the world stage, blah, 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 blah. And Russians will sort of bow down before his image for decades to come.
Well, I think that it will be, he'll be called the Great, you know, if anyone's going to be called the Great, I think he'll be called the Great in Russia. I mean, I don't imagine that he'll
not
be called not in Poland or Germany.
No.
Anyway, well, you said three. I mean, do you have three?
Well, that was a bluff, you see. well, you were talking about saints. I mean, Saint Barak, I think, or Michelle. I mean, they'll be saints, won't they? There'll be children's books about them, but they probably are right now. British politicians, no. And actually, we could
But the British stage is too small.
It's too small, and also it's too disputed, isn't it? It's too disputatious, our political culture now, for anybody to agree on a single figure. I mean, Macron clearly has aspirations to be right, Emmanuel
so,
the Great.
Yeah, and so Napoleon is, I guess, in a sense, the archetype of the great man whose shadow hangs over the whole of the 19th century. And so every great French leader has that. So De Gaulle, you would say, was great. The Gaullist ideal of France is great, De Gaulle is great, and Macron is clearly part of that tradition.
But actually, the one person we haven't talked about, probably the most powerful and respected leader, certainly the most respected leader, I would say, in the Western world, is Angela Merkel.
Yeah.
Angela the Great? Germans don't do greatness now, do they?
No, because the whole point of Merkel is that she's kind of anonymous. I mean, that's
her
why
non-greatness
people,
is her calling card, isn't it?
Kind of grey competence is what she's all about.
She's the German John Major.
Well, except that the one time where she didn't take the kind of grey safe course was where she opened the borders. And
that's the arc of history again, isn't it? That's the sainthood.
So she very much saw that, I think.
Yeah, Saint Angela.
She has a claim on that meaning of the word great, but not in any sense a claim on the kind of Frederick the Great model of greatness, because that's the whole point of her.
She will never end
and
up
the whole
in,
point of
in the
modern Germany is that it's a rejection of that tradition.
So on that happy note, thank you, Tom. And thank you for listening. I'm sure we've provoked some thoughts, and we'd be very glad to hear your opinions, particularly if they're attacking Tom. And
or Dominic, please, I just get that in.
We'll be back next time. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to The Rest is History. For bonus episodes, early access, ad-free listening, and access to our chat community, please sign up at restishistorypod.com. That's restishistorypod.com.